What's up, pizzas? Corey Vincent here, and this is Video Game Bang, brought to you by NerdReactor.com. What are you reacting to? We have a fantastical show for you guys this week, because we have Alexander Van Bagginswiener on the show. My rival, good friend, the strawberry blonde bastard from Bastonia is here, as long with Joey Ferris, YouTube sensation, Nerd Reactor writer, host of his own podcast called The Game and Talk, which you can find on iTunes and SoundCloud and all those other good things. Aaron Carter is here because he has nowhere better to be, simply put. We have a very special guest with us through the entire show. His name is Tim Nguyen. He is a composer for the new XCOM 2 game. He did The Punisher. He's also a composer on Supernatural. So this guy's kind of a big deal. We have him. We're talking to him on this week's Game Bang.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Video Game Bang. Video Game Bang. Your weekly source for all things video game. Featuring your fearless hosts, Corey Vincent.
I'm pretty much Microsoft and Marvel. The cans are on. If the ish gets real.
Shot during the day.
And Aaron Carter.
Buy the armor, I equip it, and it's like Pink Thong. The guy that delivers vending machine items in my job. He could play the Rhino.
Fill up your Mountain Dew and grab your Doritos. It's time for Video Game Bang.
What is up, pizzas? Corey Vincent here, and this is Video Game Bang, brought to you by NerdReactor.com. What are you reacting to? Corsair Gaming, come sail away with us, and Antlion Audio, keep those headphones, add yourself a mod mic. I am back from Silicon Valley. It feels great to be back in the VGB studios, hosting the show that I love with all of my heart. Locking it down while I was away partying pretty hardcore was Aaron Carter.
What's up, everybody? Batman versus Superman.
No, Aaron, save it. Save something, man. You gotta save it.
I'm gonna say.
You think when the Beatles come out, they play their best song?
I think some of them are dead.
I think.
Are they?
About 75% of them, right?
A percentage.
Yeah.
Well, you may wonder, why did he make a Beatles reference? This is a video game podcast. We don't talk about music. Well, that's a damn lie, because we do have a special guest on the show with us. He is the composer of the new XCOM game. Mr. Tim Nguyen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The way you kind of set that up was as if we were going to introduce a Beatle.
Well, Tim, yeah. I hear you produce music for the Beatles. Is that correct?
Of course I do. Me and Ringo Starr, all about it.
Wow. Also joining us on the show, Alexander Van Bagginswiener.
Hi, everyone.
And Joey Ferris, fellow Nerd Reactor writer, was with me in Silicon Valley.
That's right, unfortunately.
And how dare you? We had fun. We had very good times.
We had all those memories of me forgetting shit.
Yeah.
My God.
5 minutes in, Joey left my microphone on the counter of the hotel.
Yes. Whoa. Oh, but the best part was I come home, I get stuff out of the trunk, and the one thing that I forget in my trunk is my duffel bag. The thing that is bright red, and it's now in the studio.
And that's why he's here. Yeah. We almost got in a fight with a hobo.
This is true.
San Jose.
In San Jose, we almost got in a fight with a hobo.
There's a lot of hobos.
Mm-hmm.
Did he like Batman v Superman? Is that why you almost got into a fight?
Yeah, we were so pissed off that, how could you like that trash movie?
What happened. I like the movie.
It's ruined my day.
It really did ruin your day, but we got to push forward.
Go ahead.
We got to push forward. If you guys really want to hear a review for Batman v Superman, you can check out our sister podcast, because they're little girls.
Wow.
The Filmlosophers. They are also produced by VGB Studios. I was a guest on that podcast along with Sean Long. We talked about the movie in depth for about an hour and a half, people. A lot to digest in that film. So if you want a non-spoiler version, it's there. If you want the spoilers, go bananas.
If you want the truth, Aaron's rant comes on at
10:30 p.m. tonight.
Yeah. You didn't even see the movie
on your local channel.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Aaron, spoiler alert.
The only review you need to hear from a person who didn't see the movie.
Oh, my God.
That's watch him. True. Watch him totally love it when he finally sees it.
I promise you I won't.
I can guarantee you he won't.
Everything was secondhand information for Aaron.
Whatever.
Tim, thank you for joining us on the show. Let everyone know, what's your credentials?
Just video games or just overall?
We want to know everything.
I've been doing it for quite some time. Video games, Command & Conquer Red Alert 3, The Darkness, Red Faction Guerrilla, The Simpsons game, The Punisher, just came out, XCOM 2. that was the big one. I'm doing a future game coming up here called Total War Warhammer. If you're another Warhammer,
is that one you're really interested in, Bags?
Yes, actually, I am.
Yeah, no, it turned out it's pretty neat. So that's coming out next month. So, yeah, and I work on some TV shows. I work on Supernatural.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, nice. I've worked on Horrible Bosses too. I've worked on, just stuff. Lots of movies, lots of films, lots of everything. So
for a guy who's been in the industry so long, where were your beginnings? Were you like a band guy? Were you in a punk band? In the or what was your musical origins?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. I was into rock and roll, punk, whatever, in the 80s, and I picked up guitar, started on that, started writing a lot of music, did a lot of live shows, mostly trying to pick up girls.
yeah.
And it's true.
Isn't that how everything starts?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how that helps helps everything there. So from there I went on to become a composer by going to USC, studying, film, music, and composition and stuff like that. And then just from there went to doing low budget thrillers, from the Roger Corman-esque movies, and just everything just kind of built one thing on top of the other to where I am now.
So when you were back in your band days, what was the name of the band?
Let me see. I'm trying to remember the first one. We had two names. Telesis was one of them. That's such an 80s.
Telesis.
Close Quarters was the second one. So
that was in the 90s, right?
Yeah, I was getting closer to the 90s. Yeah.
Close Quarters.
Sounds like.
So those are the two names. Big winners. You could tell why I kept up with that part of my career. So
that's pretty awesome though. Like, were you working? Was that supporting you? Like, were you able to make enough money doing live gigs that was your job?
Well, yeah. If you mean by spending $10,000 on PA equipment and probably making $600, if you call that supporting me, probably I guess that would be it. But. No, not really. It was more. We always wanted it to support us, and we always wanted to do a lot of gigs. But we just rehearsed all the time, and broke up, and did more stuff. And it's just typical, craziness of high school, high school days. And I think it really led me to, after the experience with bands and waiting. I don't know if you've been in bands or not, but it always seems like the drummer's late or...
Hey, whoa. How dare you?
Whoa.
Well, it could be different with what your experience is. My experience was I always had a tardy drummer, so I think after that, I kind of struck out and wanted to do everything on my own and not have to rely on...
Drummers, yeah. Like Corey.
Late drummers or bass players that didn't want to play or sing the parts, harmonies that you didn't want to see. I wanted to be able to have my stamp on every part of it. And so that's I guess that part of my personality really lends me well to film scoring and stuff, where you're really everything's on your shoulders. So I think it just all kind of stemmed from that.
Now, moving in towards when you started to go to school, were you like a trained musician before, and then you decided to go to school and actually have to learn sheet music and all that stuff, or had you already known all that?
I was probably semi-trained. I did a lot of choir and show choir and classically, derivatives of classical music and such like that in high school. But I think I really got my feet wet coming in college, where it was serious business. It wasn't just a little bit of reading here and there and things. And I think too, as a guitar player, you're not really taught to read music, especially when it comes to rock and roll. It's much more it's much more common to read chord charts and things like that. I found the people that I went to school with and grew up with and things. I mean, it seemed like there was two different sort of schools of thought. There was the people like myself that, as composers, I would think of chords. I would think of everything in chordal sort of structures and song forms and things like that. And then there were the performers that whatever they had in front of them, the ink on the page, that's all they could do. And if it wasn't, you know, written out completely for them, they just kind of stared at you with this blank look on their face. So I didn't really have I wanted to write music. I didn't want to be the best performer. I didn't want to be, you know, you name it, Eddie Van Halen or whatever it happened to be, guitar player. I wanted to write songs from an early age, and that was my focus, and that's always has been throughout my education has been the underlying factor of I didn't want to practice 10 hours a day to get better at the violin. I wanted to jump in and write songs.
So in your current situation, I mean, you have a studio. Do you work with, do you still perform? Like, do you play the guitar tracks and place the drums, or do you actually have real live musicians come in and work with them?
I think a little bit of both. For my first game score, it was The Punisher. And so, you know, my big opportunity, and I thought, well, it's time to get in some really great guitar players and bass, you know, players and drummers and things. So I got some great musicians in, and they did a really good job, but there were still some things that I just didn't, as a guitar player, just didn't really sit right with me. So I ended up redoing half the guitar tracks. And it's been like that through, I will hire somebody to augment me occasionally on guitar if it's a guitar sort of score. But there's just certain ways that I like to hear it, and you try to produce it in a certain way, but there's still plenty of times that I pick up the axe and shred a little bit. Thank goodness it's not like back in the day, you know, I said Eddie Van Halen and Steve Lukather, and it was all these guys that, like, you know, shredded in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I never was that guy. I was never the guy that would go and solo for, you know, umpteen bars and things like that. I was much more in the pocket sort of guy. So nowadays that's the style. And so it's kind of come full circle, and you know, I can play again. So
that's awesome. So you did The Punisher. That was, you said, your big chance. How did that opportunity come about? Like, were you a fan of video games beforehand, or was this something you fell into?
I guess I've always been playing video games my whole life. So I don't know. I don't know necessarily if you would say that I was a fan of video game music per se, but I played, you know, video games from, you know, the first early PC games to, you know, just 10 minutes ago.
What were you playing?
Yeah, well, I was playing XCOM 2, but one of the games that I play a lot because I have young kids is they like to play Minecraft with me.
Oh, so nice.
It's kind of a, you know, you wouldn't think that so much, but that's kind of the world that I'm in. So going back to the Punisher, it was more, they wanted an epic sounding score that sounded like it would be part of a movie or something like that. So that's kind of where it kind of hooked me, was I wasn't thinking of The Punisher as a game score, I was thinking of it as a movie score. And it just kind of, you know, it progressed from there. You know, I got the opportunity by trying out for one of their other games that they had, and it got canceled. And then I got to know the one of the directors there really well, and she had mentioned that, oh, you know, The Punisher, they need a composer, and they need one like right now. Did an interview, and lo and behold, they loved. I did that with my partner Chris Leonards. Me and him worked on it together. So it was a fun project. Got to work with a band called Alien Ant Farm. If you've heard,
we have heard of them. Little Smooth Criminal guys.
Smooth Criminal,
they did a really good cover. Yeah,
really.
Yeah, no, they did a good job.
You mean that wasn't theirs?
No, they didn't actually create that.
They
song.
Didn't write that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh. No.
The same guy, so that good.
The guy that did the music for Sonic 3 for the Genesis did that song originally.
Oh, perfect.
That's what it was, man. Yeah. So we got to write a song together for that album, and it was fun. Just a good, great experience, and it left me wanting to do you know, a lot more. So,
any other, you know, big musicians who you respected from the past that you actually got to work with?
Let me think about that. Well, I got to work with a little bit. He came into the studio, Aloe Black, if you know him. I got to work with him a little bit, but he's an R&B artist, and he's great.
That was good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's amazing, yeah. You know, we got to play a little some of his music and such like that. The benefits of having a recording studio, you never know who's going to hop in. Yeah, I'm trying to think working with. I mean, I've worked with a lot of musicians that are on all the scores, but no one knows their names because they're on you know, unless they're film score geeks. And the George Deering, one of the best guitar players in Los Angeles, is one of the guys that I would say is the highlight of that. And you know, he's not a sexy name, but he plays on every single score you've ever.
I like how you mentioned that about oh man, what was I gonna say, Aaron? What was I gonna say?
Aloe Black, you're the man.
Aloe Black.
I'm the man, I'm the man, yeah. I'm the man.
Now you know who that is, don't you, Corey?
I do.
You're welcome.
No, you've been doing this for a while, like since Punisher, and then you're still going strong. What are some ways that you've seen the video game composition evolve? Like, is it a different game now than it was back then, or are you pretty much running things the same way?
I would say it's similar. We're always trying to reinvent the scoring aspect of games, and there's been some change in it, but it hasn't. There, you would think that with the more powerful machines that they would be, you know, when the PS3 came out, there was talk of, oh, now we have all this much more computing power and we can have all these multiple streams of music and everything going on and all this time, we can really tailor it and such. And what happens is when every generation of console comes out, yes, everything gets better and faster and everything. But what ends up happening is they can only allocate so much streams or computation cycles that go on. And video just keeps on hogging everything, and the audio just pretty much stays, you know, pretty much stays the same. So it's not vastly different than when I started. I guess the process of it, I guess, is a little bit different. And nowadays you can, you know, because of the computers and synths and things like that, you can get the orchestra to sound pretty good and pretty convincing. But I would still like, I still like to do most of my scores live, you know, with live orchestras. And you guys are up there, and you're in Sacramento, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, son of a gun. Oh, man, I'm sorry, Tim. I hate when this happens.
No problem.
Jeez, this is the podcast god smiling upon us because they've decided that we're going to be playing America's favorite game, What You Playing? Basically how this works, it's a very complicated game, Tim. And
It's
many bylaws. It's taken us 3 years to form this game to get it to its current state. But what we do is we go around Robin, talk about the games we've been playing. You kind of went already. We'll touch on those games a little bit more. First, let's start with Joey. What you been playing, man?
I've been playing my review copy of Hitman Episode 1, and which is weird because it's like I said, I could review this game if nobody else does, but I don't really know that much about Hitman. And lo and behold, I got the game. So now I'm like, well, crap. I hope I... And it's really good for beginners.
Episode
though.
One?
Yes.
That's episodic.
It's
episode,
episodic game.
What?
Yep.
Why? I've heard that it works with that.
Why, actually, because it's like... Because it kind of forces you to play the same level over and over again to figure out different tactics to take... Are you making fun of my hand gestures?
I just wanted to yell, you know nothing, right now, and then flip the table up. Continue, though.
Yes. All right. You should have jumped in.
No, it's all right. It's all right.
So... But it's still tough for me to like figure out exactly how the game works because there's so much to do even if it's just an episodic game, and there's like elusive contracts that I've yet to come out to. Don't know when that's going to be, and there's different targets to take down with different weapons and different outfits on. Like I have to eliminate this one guy while being a palace staff. I'm just like, are you just making fun of me because I know nothing?
No, Continue. You're doing great. I'm done.
Aaron,
what's your problem with this?
My problem is he's already started off with the episodic. I'm kind of done with the episodic trend that's going out.
Why?
Because have you beat the game? You've beat the game probably already by now, right?
Yes.
Or the episode.
Mm-hmm.
The episode, you know. So now you have to wait until the next one. Don't tell me it's a continue story, right? Like, did it stop at a cliffhanger?
Yes, it did. But it's like one of those stories where I just don't know what the hell is going on, so I'm like, whatever.
Hitman, you play from the beginning to the end. You get the story. You walk away. Now you're telling me you're going to cut my cake up.
Does it have a story?
Yeah, you play a bald guy with the
barcode. Oh, okay. So the story is you're just a bald guy, Agent 47.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. There's a barcode on your neck.
And there's a barcode.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, the barcode. Yeah. That was the missing piece of the story.
Supermarkets, it like beeps and stuff like
that. 12:59, right?
But it's supposed to, you know, have some type of story to it.
So you don't even know the story that a cliffhanger is happening
different.
About. There's different stories.
Nonetheless, it's a story, correct?
Maybe.
It's not like...
It might be the shittiest story.
Sonic, you can do episodically. No
there's
story.
There's no story.
Exactly. There you go. That's my point.
Oh, wait, there is a story.
Mario, there's no story to that.
Yes, there is.
What about the Telltale games?
I'll have
all
you know,
story.
Sonic 06 had the best story
in the
entire world.
The Telltale games, one thing as well, you're making decisions as you go through the story and everything like that. And I don't even like the fact that I have to wait... A certain amount of time.
You just don't like the fact that you have to wait. That's all it is.
I do see the problem with that, though, because Hitman, it's not like your decisions affect the plot.
Exactly.
It's not at all what happens. It's unfortunate, to be honest.
There you go.
And a part of me thinks that Square Enix did this because they didn't want to keep the fans waiting much longer. I don't know if that's just because a certain part of the game is not finished yet, but that's just me being.
Also, it's a decent way to fund your game. I mean, if you're thinking about dollars and cents, it's a decent way to fund your game because you get an episode or one, two in, and you go, okay, well, no one bought two, so I guess we're done. We don't need to make three.
And the problem
or we'll make three
and
then we'll
do that. I think once you start episodic,
you
got to keep going, right?
You can hella do that. But the thing is, I'm not too invested in this story so far, but, you know, I'm also not a big Hitman fan. So, sue me.
A hit fan.
That's why we got him here.
That's what I'm here for.
Yep.
That's why we call him Bags.
What?
go ahead, Aaron. What have you been playing, sir? And please, let's not say the word Smite.
No, oddly enough, I haven't played Smite.
Oh, really?
It's been more of The Division.
Oh, you're still into this one.
Still doing that one. It's not episodic.
no, it's just shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
How dare you?
Well, Tim's like, I actually composed that. You bastard.
It's not the
music was the best part though. I don't know.
It's not the most in-depth, you know, story-wise.
Oh, really?
Okay. Because I couldn't tell
you. I thought
story
was important to you.
No, it wasn't.
Oh.
Not to this game.
Oh.
This is more of a Borderlands get loot.
Yes.
Have fun shooting.
A grind set up that you
there
have to do daily
go.
Quests to be able to get things
See,
to get
yeah,
the best
the
stuff.
Thing. I don't even do daily stuff.
Oh, well, you're missing out on those
Phoenix
coins.
I get all that.
Are they really called Phoenix coins?
Yeah, they
just
are
pull
called
out of
Phoenix
your ass.
Coins.
Yes. That sounded legit.
Look, I don't have to play these games to know about them, all right?
It's like me and Batman versus Superman. Boom.
Tim, you had mentioned that you play some Minecraft and you're playing XCOM 2. What's it like to play stuff that you compose on? Are you able to actually enjoy the game, or are you like focused in on the music at all times?
Well, I it's funny you ask that because XCOM 2 was the first game that I finished, and I had to finish twice that I scored, primarily because it just gets really annoying to listen to your music over and over and over again. And it's not that it's annoying. That sounds like a bad thing to say, but it's more like it's distracting, I should say, because the way the music cuts sometimes it's not exactly how you intend it. If you go to a different map or something like that, you know, faster than that, you're like, oh, that didn't really sound that great. Oh God, it just drives me nuts or something like that. So I think it's just a distraction thing.
Do you have the ability to listen to other games and do the same deal, or is it only your own stuff? You notice every little mistake.
Well, I think it's your own stuff where you're really as critical on it as possible. Yeah. There's some times that when I'm playing the other game that I didn't mention, I don't just play XCOM 2 and Minecraft, but Fallout 4.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I had a good time with that. Yeah, I love that a lot. So yeah, there was times where the music would crap out or it'd be a bug or this or that, but it didn't bother me because I didn't do the music for it, so. I would notice it, though, yeah.
What you been playing, Bags?
Just started Borderlands 2, because we beat Borderlands 1 and the DLC, me and my girlfriend. So we're
PC?
Playing through that now.
Oh, you're playing with your
PC.
Girlfriend.
Yeah.
Your first time you guys playing through just you two?
Yeah. I have never beaten Borderlands. I had never beaten Borderlands 1. I played the first part 15 different times.
Every single thing he's ever said on the show, voided right now.
No, it's a bad game also. Voided. There's so many bad game things that it does. Voided. That 2 is fixed, but still hasn't fixed all of the things.
I'm listening.
Voided.
All of the ways that you go through quests, the pacing through areas, the way you backtrack through maps for no reason.
Voided.
It's the worst. It's because it's old. It's old as dirt now at this point. So we're excited to get to the pre-sequel because that's the most recent one where hopefully they've fixed all of the things that make it a shitty experience.
Well, they didn't.
What? I'm shocked. No, I know. I have to take it in. There's times where literally we'll be playing and be like, you know what? I'm done for tonight. I'm tired of dying here or having to walk back for 20 minutes here.
What class have you decided to play as?
I was a Berserker in the first one and I'm Krieg in the second one.
You chose Krieg?
I know, right?
Oh, I love melee. I love running in and meleeing shit. In a game about guns. It's the perfect irony.
That's why you don't have fun. What is she?
Actually, Berserker was awesome in the first one. You were basically invincible.
That was a terrible class.
I've heard Tales from the Borderlands improves immensely on the formula.
No.
I know.
What is she?
She's
also episodic.
She's what?
The Siren.
Okay.
Both.
Is this good bonding? You recommend other gamer couples play this through together?
Sure. You'll yell at each other, and that's good.
Get that frustration
I'm down.
Out.
I'm down. You need to revive me. Okay, I'm dead. Whatever, I'm dead now. Fine, I'll walk back. It's fine.
So passive-aggressive.
Okay. Wow. Can you... What's that shotgun? I use shotgun. No. Okay, so it's yours? All right, fine. Whatever. You have the shotgun. No, you need the shotgun more. That's fine.
Were those actual conversations you had while playing?
A little bit.
Excellent.
That's lovely.
Also, she gets to see me get mad at video games, so...
Wow.
That's always fun.
I've seen you get mad at video games.
I've
had
so
you rage closer.
I've definitely been mad at video games.
I've seen him rage quit on some Street Fighter before. I'm just done for the night. I just gotta go.
How do you rage quit on
Street Fighter 5? It's because it's culture shock. It's different but the same. It's like I'm doing the motions and the things that I did previously in 4 that worked flawlessly.
Oh.
None of them work.
Okay.
Also, your connection's always laggy as shit. So
wow.
I blame that.
He has an excuse every time.
Every single time.
I pushed the buttons and it didn't come out.
That's because... So there is a priority system that is different.
Okay, he's getting the technical terms. There we go.
Oh, this is fun.
Wow.
I've been playing that same Walking Dead game, and my faction kicked me out.
How do you keep getting kicked out of factions?
They like broke it to me very nice. They were like, you know, you're not as active, and we're trying to get first place, so we have to let you go.
I would have been like, are you guys serious?
I was like, you're breaking
up. This is a cell phone game.
How dare
you
guys?
Kicked out of a guild in a cell phone game?
I was like, do you know who I am? I am Video Game Bang.
Twice.
You bitch.
Didn't you also fail at the first level of the Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 or something?
How do you do that?
That was very hard.
It was really hard, apparently.
He can't Lego.
It's a Lego game.
That game was surprisingly hard.
No.
For 3-year-olds, yes.
You son of a bitch. Oh, man. Not necessarily what we've been playing, but as I did mention, Joey, myself, and the real David Webb went down to Silicon Valley for that Comic-Con. Damn good event, I got to say. Blew away my expectations.
The Woz puts on a good show?
The Woz throws a hell of a party.
Mm. Did you touch him?
Yes, actually.
We did touch him.
Did he smell like money?
He smelled like... money,
crisp $100 bills. And crisp $100 bills,
and sandwiches at the same time.
Sandwiches, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah,
he pays for everything in cash.
Does he really?
Yeah, he doesn't like to be tracked by credit cards.
I would imagine
that makes a lot of sense. All the sense in the world.
If I was the Woz,
he was kind of a jerk.
We did come up on him at a bad time. Let's be honest.
Oh, when he's walking down the street,
I thought you were going to say
when he's
out
cruising
the
down the street in his 6-4.
Right
pops,
when he was going.
Pops out of the stall. Yeah. The Woz!
We didn't notice it. Me and Joey kind of walked right past him, and then Webb started freaking out and having an Apple fanboy attack.
The Woz.
And we went and got a picture with him. And you know, of course, every time you pull out your phone for a selfie, it's facing the wrong way. So he like threw a little mini
fit. He was
rich
like, oh,
man.
Of course, you got it on the wrong side.
Well,
if this was an iPhone, you wouldn't have that problem.
I was going to say, did you guys pull out Android
yes,
to iPhone?
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
that's
see,
why.
I would have been,
wow.
No selfies.
Way to fuck it up.
I would have been like, nope, don't take any pictures of me.
Does anyone have a digital camera that I can use? Because I cannot use my phone.
I shudder to think what would have happened. What was that, Tim?
I was going to say a Polaroid, perhaps.
Yeah.
Someone capture the moment.
Yeah, sorry.
I shudder to think what would have happened if I pulled out my old Windows phone.
Oh. He would have smashed it on the ground.
He just left.
He's like, this. I'm going to buy Nerd Reactor and fire you guys.
God honest truth, when you took that picture, I didn't know who that was. That's I would have walked.
Well,
right
to be honest, we
him.
Didn't even notice that it was him. We honestly forgot. I forgot what he looks like.
He's getting a wax museum thing. No. Madame Tussauds.
They did have some wax museums on, museum things on display. There was one that looked scarily like Mark Zuckerberg, just sitting cross-legged with a MacBook, looking like a demon. Like,
was it him though?
It might have been.
It probably was him. To be honest,
was him? No, it was actually him. It was actually in the him. Flesh.
I met a childhood hero. This was big for me because, you know, we've gotten...
Speaking of drummers.
Yeah, I've gotten to interview people I consider to be big-time stars, right? And it's not shocking to me. I could deal with Alexander Baggs. You know, I don't get starstruck. You know, Seth Meyers was probably one of the bigger ones, and I handled it like a champ.
Seth Meyers, really?
You freaked out. You almost cried.
I almost cried at this man's feet. I groveled like a little baby. Sad. I said his name wrong.
Did you really?
Yeah, I butchered everything. And this is literally, I had pictures, not pictures of him specifically.
In your wallet?
They fell out when you opened your wallet? Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Okay, the band is System of a Down. My favorite band when I was in high school. I had their poster on my wall. Of course I'm going to recognize him.
That's horrible.
He is a big comic book fan. He has like commissioned art on all of his drum shells of these comic book characters. I knew he owned a store, but I didn't think he goes to the cons and runs his own booth. No one. He was a ghost. No one stopped him.
He was just chilling there like, huh?
Clearly only big in your world, huh?
And then I come up bumbling Bernie over here just screwing everything up. He actually was nice enough. He signed my press badge.
Whoa.
Took some pictures. Told me that the album is on its way.
The album's on its way.
He whispered it in my ear just like that. And he touched me on the butt.
It's on the way. The album's on the way.
And then I asked, who was that? You were like, oh, System of Down. I was like, oh, wake up. Grab a bunch of little makeup. When angels deserve to die, that guy? Okay.
Why did you say it like, I don't know.
I said exactly like they say in the song.
There you go.
That's true. Tim, starstruck moments. Have you gotten to have any of those yet?
I think the biggest one I had was with John Williams. I got to see him a couple years back or meet him a couple years back. And, I think, you know, he was coming up to a small group of us, and I said, okay, does anyone else have the balls to go up and, you know, introduce yourself? And they all said no. I said, well, I do. I don't get a chance to meet this guy. And you know, so I shook his hand, and, you know, I said, what the hell's up with Jar Jar Binks? But didn't really go over too well with him. But
he was like, actually, that was
he's all like, what the hell's this guy getting?
That was all my fault.
That was. I mean, I think any of the old timers, or even a guy that that did James Newton Howard, if you've heard of him, done a lot of big films. Mm-hmm. I kind of had. He was a composer that really meant a lot to me in college, and got a chance to meet him and had one of those, you know, 16-year-old girl moments where you're like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I think it's
a stupid question, and, you know, and then he'd ignore me, and then I'm like, I would ignore me too. That was a really stupid question.
That's the great part. Like, it does mean something different when the person actually, like, means something to you. Even, like, if they may not be the biggest name or no one really knows who they are, when you actually have that connection of, like, they helped shape my drumming, like, I knew every song from every album from System of a Down. Like, that was just the band that I studied. And to see him there just blew my freaking mind.
Mm-hmm. I actively don't talk to those people.
Really?
Like, I will fuck this up, and you don't need to be talking to someone dumb like me. I'll just save you the trouble and walk away.
Wow.
I was like, walk away.
I'm starting to feel that way, too. Yeah, I'm thinking there's a couple moments where I could have done exactly what you said. And I said, you know what? I'm just totally going to fuck this up. And now I won't like him anymore because he'll be a dick because I'd be a bumbling idiot. So, you know what? I'm just going to spare him the 10 minutes it is for me to explain how I loved all his last 15 albums or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah. We got a question from chat for you. This one comes from good old Ninja 2099. He says, have you worked or met Danny Elfman?
I have met Danny Elfman, and I have not worked with him.
There you go. That's the answer. What was it like meeting him? Was he cool?
He's a cool guy. I mean, he's definitely a cool guy. He's very, I think how everyone would expect him. I think he's, you know, eclectic and a little bit, you know, just, you know, nice enough guy, but he doesn't really want to talk to you much. And, you know, I mean, but he's a good guy. He's really talented, and he's just got a, you know, interesting way about him, shall you say.
Yeah, like one of those eccentrics. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, I didn't know him enough to really comment on that. But the guy definitely has a unique way about himself. That's for sure. Yeah.
This is a question I like to ask the composers we get, and the answers vary, and it's pretty awesome. But as a composer, you obviously are privy to like the industry and how it moves. Are there any like things that you notice a lot of younger composers doing these days that they should probably stop doing?
I don't know whether they should stop doing it. I think, and it's kind of a funny answer here. I am doing a PR here for XCOM 2, but I think sometimes that some of the younger guys, they try to whore themselves out to the nth degree, and they are trying to get so much PR and so much attention, and just kind of being buffoons about it, I would say, and taking every opportunity to be like, oh, well, you know, this person, say for instance, David Bowie died, and instead of saying, hey, you know, I really feel bad, David Bowie died, in Twitter or Facebook or whatever they're doing at the time, they would be, oh, David Bowie died, and this is a tribute song that I wrote to him. You know, some sort of like, they turn it around to where it's all about them rather than the feeling that you are feeling bad that David Bowie died, or, you know, it doesn't really feel genuine or heartfelt or anything like that. And I'm just a pretty straight ahead guy, and I just, some of that sort of nonsense, I think, where you're always just so much attention. I mean, we all have to try to get attention. No one's going to break down your door to hire you. There's a ton of talented composers at all time. So you have to get attention. But I think it's just the way you go about it is you know, interesting.
What about musically? Like, let's say to movies, the lens flare. Like, you know, that's something that gets overdone. You see it and you're like, oh, God, here's another lens flare.
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, Jar Jar Abrams. But, like, in the composing world, is there, like, they're using a gong.
They're using an air horn.
There used to be this, I'm trying to remember the score that used a lot, let me see, Rodin, I'll have to remember. If you've heard a few scores, it's called the oil can bow. This is from a few years back. Probably about 10 years ago. There's just certain sounds, and it just has a sound that goes, and it's great because it transitions. You know, it really can. It's got this kind of creepy sound, just a lot of composers have used it from time to time, and I mean, I use it a couple scores. I'm just like, I can't use this sound ever again. And people just overdid it. But I think there are certain samples that people just use over and over again, and I you mentioned gong. There's the creepy sound of it's called a waterphone, that it's where you scrape a metal thing, you bow a metal thing, and you hear it on all these scores, but it's, you just can't hear it anymore because it's so cliche nowadays to use it. So oil can bow and waterphone are my answers. That's it.
Perfect.
Yeah. Or I mean chimes too, like, you know, like a wind chime when you're doing something kind of mysterious or magical. You know, here comes these, you know, wind chimes coming in. So I think I did that last week still, but it's still pretty cheesy. But, you know, some things you can't kill.
It's just one of those things you got to suck up and do, right?
So there are, you know, especially when there's differences when you do movies and video games, where you have more time to have a little bit more nuance. But when I work on TV shows, and certain TV shows especially, you have to be fast, quick, and good. And if somebody says, yeah, I got to do, you need a wind chime here, or the producer really wants something magical, well, I know, you know, the producer is going to think this is magical. So, okay, I'll throw it on there because I'm appeasing his will, and I don't have but a 3 days to finish a score. So, you know, some things have to just go that way. So,
you know, that's, I think, a part of the game that we kind of forget. We kind of assume that when they hire a composer, you guys just could make all the decisions, you know, and everyone. But you, there are certain requirements and stuff you have to meet and people you have to please. Can that get difficult? Where you're like, oh man, we really shouldn't do that. I don't really want a gong here, you know. Or how does that give and take usually go?
I mean, I think you've nailed it on the head. I mean, it is, nothing really gets past anybody nowadays without getting approved to the nth degree. And depending on who you're working for, there may be multiple layers of people approving it and or giving input. And sometimes, you know, writing it. And a lot of video game companies I've worked for, almost every video game company I've worked for, they've all been composers that are music supervisors. And sometimes they want their opinions heard very strongly in what you're composing. The good ones just don't do that at all. But there are times where you don't really, you don't understand, you don't always have this in-depth conversation at the very beginning, like, hey, you know, who are you? You're the music supervisor, but what's your, you know, you don't get a lot of chance to like hold hands and sing Kumbaya, you know. So sometimes I understand, I get after the fact that this person is a composer in their own right, and I'm like, okay, I didn't realize that. And then it can be tricky to navigate that. And then you know, then on the other side of it, you get people that know nothing about music, and they can be tricky to deal with, because it just they don't understand the concept of it and what you're trying to achieve. They and they may be something like where the ones that really know nothing about music would be the ones that say, you know what, I really like the score for Dark Knight. Can we do something like Dark Knight? And I'm like, well, it's already been done, I don't know, 400 times, but yeah, okay. And then they won't understand, like, yeah, it doesn't really sound too much like Dark Knight. I'm like, look, I can't give you Dark Knight.
No, but just give me Dark Knight. That's
no,
all.
I know. No, it's okay. It's okay. It's no. People get sued for that. So those are the ones that I think that you have to, you know, watch out for. Or the guy that like played guitar in high school.
Oh.
And, you know, so he would be giving you like mixed notes or something like that. I'm like, dude, you don't know shit. just let the professionals.
That would totally, you know, be me if I was developing a game. No, dude, I play drums. I know. You're gonna want to move
music,
that.
Man.
You're gonna want to move that condenser like right above the crash.
Yeah, exactly, man. That kick is way too behind the beat, man. You got to replace that.
Just let me do it.
Yeah, I know. So it's this. Yeah, there are lots of things. And I think, again, when it comes to video games and or movies, there are things that that you want to stick your stick your foot down if you really believe it. I've you know, really been known to raise my hand and say, look, this is just not okay, and this is why. So you know, I had a job once that working for NBC, and it was a guy that wanted me to get closer and closer and closer to the temp. And I eventually had to talk to his boss and say, look, this is what's going on. Well, needless to say, it didn't do me any favors at NBC. but I had to say something. I just felt like it was ethically, you know, and morally wrong to try to, you know, rip these things off and then call it your own music. So
what of all the projects you've gotten to work on, video games, movies, which one was giving you the most freedom to do what you would consider your style of music?
Well, I mean, my style of music is kind of morphed into so many different styles of music because it's had to. I don't know. You know, I feel like I'm Morgan Freeman, and I've been institutionalized a little bit, you know, kind of from Shawshank Redemption, where, I mean, I like to do these big epic scores. So anything that kind of falls into that, I feel like that's in my wheelhouse. I think the scores that I have been most pleased with have been The Punisher, which was one of the first scores. I think that holds something, you know, real near dear to my heart. That because it was one of those things where I started writing the music, and they just loved it immediately, and they just said, just write, just keep going, and they never gave us any comments whatsoever. Wow. So that was pretty nice. And that I worked with them again on Red Faction Guerrilla, and that was a great score. To same sort of deal, just keep going. They love what I did. And I think too, the scores that really that stand out to me that from a personal perspective are the ones where I got to go up and record at Skywalker Ranch. And you know, I got to do a week of recording it at Skywalker Ranch for the Simpsons game. And those are just, you know, magical moments that when you get to get up and conduct your music in front of, you know, 85 piece orchestra, and it's just, it's amazing. I mean, the feeling is just so euphoric, and it's just, you can't have those moments back again. It just, you know, I'll never forget just walking off the stage after I got my last cue finished, and I was on cloud nine. Like, you can't get a bigger high than that. So
that's amazing. So yeah. XCOM 2, what did they tell you when they sat you in the room? They're like, this is what we want. What could we expect from the music from XCOM?
Well, I worked on XCOM 1 on a small, sort of a smaller role. So I kind of knew what was going on, and I'm familiar with the music. So they liked it. They wanted to have the score related to XCOM 1, sort of in the same vein. They wanted it synthy. They wanted it dark and certain things. But they wanted it a little bit more tragic and a little bit more, with a sense of, like, you know, longing and loss and that sort of stuff. So that was what trying to the tiptoe between being sort of the XCOM heroic military music and then also having sort of more of a dark, you know, bent to it. That's kind of where it all started, and you know, just kind of came from there.
Very nice. So one thing we like to do on the show, we got to stay true, is we're going to do run through a couple of the top news stories from the week, grab everybody's opinion at the table. The first one, obviously, Batman vs. Superman is getting its first initial reviews. Rotten Tomatoes has it sitting at about a 34%. It's polarizing. Some people are giving it 9s and 10s. Other major outlets are giving it less. What do we think is going on here? Joey, you actually saw it. One of the things I found interesting is that you said you loved it as a DC fan. If you could separate that from yourself, can you try and give us an honest review?
All right, you mean separate, like, because I'm thinking
the fanboy part, because we know
you
loved
it. Because I'm thinking as this movie is great for DC fans, but if you're really not into that stuff, I can see you kind of being like, what did I just watch? Because style, it was a very stylized superhero film. Like, if you told me Zack Snyder didn't direct this and they brought in, like, Terrence Malick or some crap like that, I would have believed you, because I feel like he just took that artistic level and turned it up a little higher than it needed to be. But other than that, I was just like, I'm excited for what they have in store.
Aaron, you haven't seen it. You've been reading reviews and spoilers. Are you going to go see it at least? And Batman's your favorite character.
Yes. Batman is my favorite character.
You're so special. You're asking, like, 90% of
people. Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's not lying. But I will not pay to go see this movie, no.
So you're going to buy a ticket to another movie and then go see. You're going to buy a ticket to Buying Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
I might actually go see Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. No, the movie, the trailer was already disappointing for me.
Which one?
All of them. And
we laughed out loud at the first one.
It was...
You lulled?
We had a night of hilarity.
Was it, the red capes are coming? The red capes are coming.
It was a big problem the
was
whole thing.
Was that the
thing.
Laugh part?
No, it was the whole
just
thing.
The beginning to,
like,
the end.
Wow.
Yeah. Just,
yeah.
No, I'm not going to go see this movie in theater, at least. I will watch it just to shred it apart.
You will pirate the crap out of it.
For legal purposes, no. For anecdotal reasons, no. But no,
let the record show that he just winked.
Yeah. No, but it's a thing where, like you said, he saw it as a DC fan. You know, can you separate yourself from that? That's one thing I can definitely do. But then if I go and watch this movie and it's just bad from the Aaron Carter that took film classes as well, I'm going to be even more upset. And DC will hear about it in a sternly written letter.
Sternly written blog post?
Yes.
What do you fire Zack Snyder.
What do you think, Badge? Finished. Are you you go see the superhero movies?
No, not really. Yeah. I don't go see movies, honestly, that often.
Are you going to go see the Warcraft movie, though?
No.
Directed hell by David no. Bowie's son.
Why the hell would I do that? How dare
it's
you?
Just directed Warcraft. By David Bowie's son.
I don't care.
Did you know that David Bowie just passed away recently?
Yeah, I did.
Would you like to hear the tribute song I made for him?
I heard some tribute songs. Link to me on Twitter.
So here's my son.
No, I'd say it looks bad. It looks like there were some choices with either casting, writing, or style, or some mixture of the three. I was almost said two. That really just led to like head scratching moments of like, really, that's what you're gonna go with? Okay, I mean that's your choice. It's wrong, but that's your choice.
It seems like they don't want to read the source material and do enough. I guess I don't want to say.
Are we talking about Warcraft right now?
Or? Everything.
Okay.
It's almost like the source material isn't good enough.
Yeah.
For what they're doing, it's like that's the idea behind it. It's like, yeah, no, I understand this is what you've been doing for like years, and it's worked, and you know it's a thing. But you're like, I don't want to do that. It's
let's
like
spice it up a bit.
Yeah.
Well, because they say
let's put my twist on it.
The number one thing that I hear a lot is, oh, that didn't translate well to movie. Like, is it a different universe or something? You're telling me that story that. You know, captivated millions doesn't translate to another
thousands,
medium.
Thousands. Let's be honest.
Whatever.
Tim, are you following the Marvel Cinematic and DC Cinematic Universes? Are you into the blockbusters?
I mean, I definitely am. I mean, I think for me, the day it just, I knew that the movie at least wasn't going to really work well. I haven't seen it yet, so I could be 100% wrong on this. But I wasn't really looking forward to it when I saw that Ben Affleck was cast in the role of Batman. I guess it just feels a little strange. I love him in a lot of different movies.
Geely.
That one especially, yes. That was a good one. But,
Mom and Phantoms, yo.
I think with The Dark Knight, I think they really redefined the Batman sort of role of stuff. And it wasn't Michael Keaton. It wasn't, you know, Val Kilmer. You know, it was or George Clooney. It just felt right to me. And then, you know, I'll be curious to see it when I see it on screen. We'll see, you know, if Ben Affleck but did anything that was worth doing it, you know.
What I keep telling people, because I saw it, and it, what you saw in the trailers is what you get. Like, whatever impressions and feelings you get, 100% true. Name something.
Name something?
Yeah.
Brooding Batman. Do we get a brooding Batman?
He's
in
brooding.
There?
No shit, Sherlock.
So brooding.
But see, there's a difference.
It just doesn't.
He told
when
me
I,
he's
when
Bruce
I watched
Wayne
the,
and Batman.
When I watched the movie, I felt something completely different than when I was watching the trailers.
But,
to be totally
okay,
honest.
So, but he says, Corey's like, in the movie, you don't get a Bruce Wayne. You just get two Batman. You get Batman in a suit. And you get Batman
in a three-piece.
Yeah.
He's the same guy. Like,
so, like, there's no distinction.
Christian
so like,
Bale,
Batman
when he was,
streets,
when he was
Batman in the
Bruce
sheets.
Wayne, and he's at a party, he acts kind
he's
of
Bruce
childish.
Wayne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Throwing money around.
Playboy
yeah.
throwing
this
money.
This Harvey Dent guy. I like him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this one, he was just the same character.
He was a bitter old man.
No,
that's pretty much what he was.
He wasn't smart. I'm pretty sure anything you went into, there's like, what you see in the trailer, there are little things more going on to what you may have seen in the trailer, like mm-hmm. where they meet. That's a really good scene, way better than it was pulled off in the trailer, because there's so many elements you weren't privy mm-hmm. to when you saw it the first time. But for the most part,
Wonder Woman surprised me.
Well, no, see, Jesse Eisenberg sucked in the trailer, sucked in the movie.
What? Yeah. Whoa! You mean he was cast poorly for it? Oh my God!
Wonder Woman,
so shaggy.
Wonder Woman stole the show in the trailer. Stole the show in the movie.
She didn't steal the show in the trailer for me.
I thought she did.
I don't understand where everybody was just like.
But she shows up and
Wonder
she's holding
Woman.
The shield and she's all,
you know,
badass.
It just makes me feel like they were, because you know, strike while the iron is hot. It sounds like they're heating up their iron for Justice League to come out. Like, we got to hit that.
For
it. But yeah. It's like, well, but you,
what
but it wasn't
was
hot.
Yeah,
but it wasn't hot. They are heating it. They are causing fire to heat it.
They're rubbing sticks together.
Yes, they're currently. Trying to make that
are
fire
you saying
happen.
This was a trailer for basically Justice League.
It's a two-hour
trailer.
Yes.
2-hour
trailer. Yes.
Yes.
My thing is, and I did this same deal, Spider-Man 3. What was another one that did
Spider-Man
this?
Spider-Man 3.
I don't know. There are several movies do this. Where
Fantastic Four.
Fantastic.
No, that was just bad.
They're so bad.
The movie is called Batman versus Superman.
Uh-huh.
There, that writes itself. Just give me a movie of Batman and Superman.
Like 2 hours of them fighting, right?
No, not yeah, some of that, yeah. A lot of that. But like them outfoxing each other, like in the cartoon when you said Batman looks through his mask, and give me more moments like that instead of like.
You mean Superman looks through Batman's mask?
No, it was the other way around. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Batman looks through Superman's mask.
Batman has laser eyes.
But see, that's the problem with DC. How do you write a character that is intelligent? And then have him go into a brain battle with somebody who literally beats all his enemies by punching harder than they punch him.
Sometimes he goes faster than them.
Or sometimes he runs faster. So there how you do go. You put those two together? That's why I said before, you can go back podcasts ago when the thing was announced, how do you portray and make audiences believe that this guy who destroyed half a city in his first movie, just fighting somebody, accidentally destroyed half a city, go up against the guy who puts on bat ears and jumps from roof to roof.
Bat nipples.
Exactly. Like, it's not... It works in comic books and cartoons because, you know, belief is suspended because it's all animation and stuff like that.
Well, in the first 5 minutes of the movie, bats literally swarm a boy and lift him up a well. My belief has been officially suspended.
But it's difficult to do. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I just think the fact that they rushed... And they're trying to, you know, create their own heat.
Yeah.
They didn't let it simmer.
Yeah. We'll move on. The next one is The Walking Dead season finale is going to be 90 minutes.
Is it the series finale?
This is the end of this season. No, we're not ending this one.
Bags, as a scientist, because I'm calling you one.
Why?
You should be offended.
They call me Dr. Bags.
Exactly.
That's a real truth.
He should be offended.
One person does it.
Do you know how long
I don't...
the human body takes to decay fully?
3 seconds. At least in my incinerator.
Yeah. Wow, terrible. This show should have been over. How long has this show run?
Oh, yeah.
Since 2011?
Yeah, every zombie on the planet should
it's
have been
It's not
bones.
About the zombies, man. It's about the humans. They're the walking dead. Stupid. Get it?
Like in,
it's deep.
Like in, what, season two when they find a safe haven?
Yeah.
And then it gets overrun by zombies?
I've only watched up to season three, episode two.
Well, and then season three, they find a safe haven. And then they get over it. And then season five, it really changes up.
Do they find a safe haven? No, but, and then, wait.
And
but
then
it's good, right?
It's good for
what
a while.
Twist.
Shut up, Aaron.
What a twist. Shut
up. So I'm guessing the season finale of this one is they're going to get overrun by zombies and they have to go find another safe haven.
Who'd have thunk it?
Wow. Tim,
writes itself,
back me up here. What shows are you into? Besides Supernatural.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is my schedule doesn't allow me to watch too much, but Game of Thrones, I'm into that.
Okay,
there you go. That's a good one.
Season, you know, that's gonna be a good one.
Yep.
And Vinyl, that's another one on HBO. I don't know if you've checked that out, but it's Sunday nights. I think 9 o'clock is pretty badass.
Are they paying you, sir?
No, it feels like it, but it's just, you know, it's refreshing when you watch some crappy TV on other stations, and then you watch some of these HBO shows, and they're like, just their cut above, and, you know, they spend the dough, and they just look like it's effortlessly, and yeah, please go check out Vinyl, man. I mean, seriously, it's a kick-ass show about rock, the early, you know, stages of rock and roll in New York. And I like it because it has the music aspect to it, and you know, the acting's great, and the mob's there, and yeah, it's all good stuff.
Rapid fire question time for you: if you could have done any piece of composition for a movie in the past, what would it have been?
The Godfather.
Good answer. Good
video
answer.
Game.
Video game. Fallout 4, or Fallout, I guess. I would have liked to have done that, yeah.
Good answer.
GG.
He's on fire. Please tell everybody where they can find more information about you and your studio.
My studio is Sonic Fuel Studios that I own with my partner Chris Lennox. You can check us out on the web with that. My website is www.timwin.net. Twitter, timwin_. And, That's about it. That's all you can find me.
You can hear the man's work on TV shows like Supernatural and, of course, the new XCOM. And then in the future, what was the game, though? the Warhammer?
Total War Warhammer, and then I have a Disney show that's coming out in the fall that it's not named yet, so at some point it'll be
He's on the Disney payroll, people.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's awesome. You're going to have to come back and let us know when you can talk about that.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, yeah.
That'll be so cool. Well, that's our show for Alexander Baggs, Joey Ferris, Aaron Carter. My name is Corey Vincent, and you have all just been banged.
Batman v Superman sucks.
I knew it.